I think it's good to see you, and I'm glad you've chosen to honor God and in worshiping Him this morning.
The year was 1952, and it was in a southwest town, and there was a preacher who was going around doing a lot of meeting work. In fact, he was getting to be pretty popular throughout the southwest part of our nation. And in fact, he had a four-year slate full of meetings, and he did that for his livelihood. He didn't work with a single church. He just went around preaching meetings. He had a son back home, and the mom was raising the son, primarily with the father gone a lot, and the son had just turned 16 and was getting a little testy. He wasn't into full-blown rebellion yet, but he was beginning to have some problems in listening to his mother and to wanting to experience and experiment with some things that he probably shouldn't have been doing. And it was one night that the mom got on the phone and she called the father and she said, "Honey, I need you here. I can't raise him by myself." And so the father proceeded to sell his home out west, take his family 700 miles across the U.S., to take a position with the single church, canceled the four-year slate of meetings he was doing, never recovered again professionally, as you might think, in a preaching way. But that boy that he made that choice, his son was the name James Dobson. Now, I don't agree with everything that James Dobson might stand for in terms of some of his doctrinal beliefs, but I'll tell you, James Dobson, for the last 40 years, has written some of the most helpful and classic works on parenting and marriage and discipline and training, and has helped the past few generations tremendously in his books and in his radio program and the American family. And it all began when his father, back in 1952, James Dobson Sr., said, "You know what? I'm going to put my kid above my profession and above what I want to be doing now." And he prioritized his child. This morning we're talking about choosing to cheat in relation to our kids. And we've been discussing priorities around this theme, choosing to cheat. And the idea is that we got so many things going on in our life that we're going to have to choose what we cheat. And last week we talked about we have to prioritize our spouse. And the whole idea is we're wanting to restructure our lives according to the priorities as God would have us align them. So the first week we talked about the very most important priority we should have in our life is God. And we don't want to cheat God. And then we talked about our spouse, which would come below God, and our family and our marriage. And then we talked about this week our kids. And so we're going to begin by thinking this morning about choosing to cheat our kids. Let me give a couple of disclaimers, though, before I get into this lesson. First of all, anytime you talk about priorities, it's a sensitive and challenging topic. Anytime you talk about parenting or kids, it's a very sensitive and challenging topic. And so you put them both together in the same lesson. We've got a challenging lesson that the preacher just soon skip over, but we need to do it. So let me give you a few disclaimers before I preach the sermon. First of all, let me say that by preaching this sermon, I don't think that Amanda and I are a perfect model of parents. And certainly we haven't experienced and all the challenges of being a parent because our oldest is only 6. And so we don't know many of the challenges that you have experienced. And so one of the reasons I preach on this is because I need to do better at it myself and I need to learn more about it myself. And so hopefully as I preach and study, I can be a better parent. Secondly, let me disclaim this. I don't think that there's a parent that ever finishes or goes through the years of parenting or raising children and then later on in life still being a parent, you never quit being a parent, that doesn't feel guilty over some things. I know just in the short time we've been a parent that there's things you look back on and that you wish you could do differently or you want to change about yourself and what you've done. And so I want to say this up to the front that I understand that especially those who think about in years have gone by in raising your kids, you can feel a lot of guilt. And I want you to know that I'm not preaching this sermon to make you feel guilty. In fact, my whole point of preaching this sermon is not to inspire guilt, but to present knowledge for the present. To present knowledge for the present. so that we can try to change our life now. We can't go back and change the past. And so I'm not trying to create a lot of feelings of guilt. It might be if there's a lot of feelings of guilt created that you might need to deal with that with God. But that's not my agenda. And thirdly, let me say that I want you to apply this to your current situation. Because no matter whether you've got young children at home like we do, whether you haven't had children yet, whether you've got teenage children, whether you've got grown children with children of their own, you can apply this lesson. And you have to prioritize your kids in whatever situation they're in. So though I might talk about it in a teenage or young kid perspective, or maybe even sometimes in a grandparent perspective, I want you to apply it in whatever applies to you, because you have that responsibility. And so let's get into the lesson now. I want to begin by saying that God expects us, and I want to make this point from the Bible, that God expects us to prioritize our kids. That I'm suggesting in this series of lessons that it is number three on the list as we think about a list. God, our spouse, and then our kids. Way back in the beginning, when God created man and when He established man, He gave us the mandate that we were supposed to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Before we fell into sin and transgressed God, before we were given work, before we were given various other responsibilities, God said, I want you to be fruitful and multiply. God wants us to create more of our own. He wants us to raise and nurture and develop the next generation. He wants us to raise kids. And so He expects it to be a high priority on our list. Number two, we need to recognize that Noah in Hebrews chapter 11 verse 7 is commended because he saved his household. Noah preached for some, probably 100 years, but he wasn't able to convert other people, but he saved his household, his wife, his three sons, and their wives. And he is commended for that in the great chapter of Hebrews chapter 11. And so he prioritized his family. And our Lord, when He was here on the earth in Matthew chapter 18, was asked, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And He called to them a child, and He put the child in the midst, and He says, that truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. For whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, but whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him to have a great millstone fastened around his neck and to be drowned in the depth of the sea. That's like one of those statements that you think, did Jesus really say that? It'd be better to have a great stone thrown around their neck and they cast down into the sea than to cause one of these little ones to stumble. What's Jesus saying? He's saying kids are to be a priority. He's saying if you want to know what the greatest person in the kingdom is, it's going to be the one who's like a child. They're humble. They're innocent. They're trusting in faith. And don't do anything, you adults, to lead that child away from that faith and that love of me. What a statement by Jesus. He's saying that we should value and love little children and we should lead them to faith in God. And then in Ephesians chapter 6, the passage that Jamie read for us, fathers are to raise up their children and mothers, obviously, in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. In Titus chapter 2, verse 4, the mothers are commanded there to love their children. So we're commanded to love our children, to bring them up in the Lord. And so God expects us to prioritize our kids. They are to be a chief priority of our life. Now I want to share, if you weren't here last week, I want to share this illustration again for you. And if you were here, I want to remind you of the illustration. And I also want to apply it to children. And plus, my kids are really wanting to hold this rock. Now, this rock represents the responsibilities, duties, obligations I have. Last week, we talked about it toward a spouse. But this week, I want to talk about it regarding our children. So, it's my responsibilities, it's my obligations, it's my duty as a father. But I'm going to give this rock, and I'm going to say, now, Brooke and Austin, let's see. Austin, I want you to hold this side, and Brooke, you come over here. I want you to hold that. Can you hold that there at the end? And I said, now guys, I'm really busy. I've got a lot of things going on right now. And I've got things that I need to be doing. And I need you to hold that rock. It's a very important rock. Can y'all hold it for me? And so they hold the rock. They have a mental willingness to do so. But pretty soon, and maybe even with this fake rock, the physical strength they have is going to wear out. And the longer I'm away, the longer I cast off my duties to lead them, my duties to be a parent to them, my duties to and obligations I have toward them, the more I say, I've got my thing to do over here and I'm needing them to do it and take care of it for themselves, the sooner it's going to be to their emotional willingness is going to wear out too. And eventually, the rock is going to fall. And when the rock falls, all kinds of problems happen. And it's hard to put the rock back together, as we observed. And it shatters. And there's all kinds of problems. And usually when it shatters, when the rock gets dropped, I'm over here doing my own thing. And when the rock shatters, that's when I come running back. And that's when I'm saying, what's the problem? I'll do anything to fix the problem. But by then, sometimes I'm not even sure who they are, and they're definitely not sure who I am, and they don't want to put their trust in me, put their faith in me, because they don't know if they can really depend on me, if I really love them. And so we're thinking this morning about holding the rock. And what's interesting about this parable or this illustration is kids are wanting acceptance. They're wanting value and love, and they fear rejection maybe more than anything. And they want to feel approval, especially most of all from their mom and their dad. And they want to feel as if they are priority. And so the longer they get to feel it holding the rock, and the more they feel like dad or mom is not prioritizing them, the more the rock becomes a symbol of their rejection. And the more frustrated and emotionally upset they get at dad and at mom. Now, if you don't believe this to be true, think back to your own childhood. How important was it for you to feel priority in your father's heart? If you grew up wondering where you fit in, seldom seeing him, seldom feeling like he had time for you, if he cared for you and loved you, how did it make you feel? You grew up with confusion, with a myriad of emotions. You grew up struggling to feel secure in your father's love. Now, what about your mom? If you were always having to compete for her time, her affection, her love, how did it make you feel? Well, obviously, it left you feeling the same way as I described with the father. As if as if they never really prioritized you. Now, here's the thing that we don't realize in family relationships is that most every other relationship is about performance. About performance. How do you do at work? Well, it's about how are you doing at work. In other words, are you able to perform in doing the job? If you can, if you're a school teacher, if you can go in and teach the content, if you can manage the classroom, how can you perform? If you're on the workforce and you're on a line in a factory, can you do the job? If you were to become at a point where you couldn't do the job, they're going to ask you to leave. Right? Because it's about performance. But family is probably the only relationship that it's not about performance. It's about relationship. And though I can come to work and get my work done, or I can go somewhere else and get my job done and perform, family is not just about getting the kids done or getting my wife taken care of. But it's about building a relationship and focusing on a relationship. So I never really get done. And it's not about how I perform. It's about, here's the key, it's about you being there. It's about your heart. It's about your love. And so family is about your presence, your priority. Now, so this morning what I want us to think then is how do we leave our kids and this is one, as I said, that I do from time to time, and I think all of us must admit we do from time to time. How do we leave our kids holding the rock? How do we leave them holding and doing what we should be doing for them? Well, I want to share three ways, physically, emotionally, and spiritually, we leave our kids holding the rock, or we cheat our kids. First of all, let's think about physically. I want to share a few reasons or ways that we cheat our kids physically. First of all, I believe we cheat them physically when we neglect time with them. Now, this can come in different forms. It might come in overscheduling our lives and our kids. If we get to the point of where we've just overscheduled our own lives so that we're so busy we don't have time for them. Now, this can apply at any age. You know, you may have grown kids. And do you have time for them? Or have you gotten so busy with everything else that you don't have time for your kids? Maybe it's young kids, teenage kids. Maybe they're so busy and we've overscheduled their lives. We have so many extracurricular activities scheduled up and booked up. Let me ask you this question. When you think back to your childhood, what are some of the most precious memories you have? Were they the organized events? Were they the times when y'all said, we're going to do this big thing for our family? They might be. But typically, the memories you have are the times just around home. The times where there wasn't anything on the schedule. You didn't have to be anywhere. Everybody was home and you just did something together. And you hung out on Saturday morning. And there was no activities. You fixed breakfast. You did things. You went out with your dad while he was doing something. You went hung out with your mom a little bit while she was doing something together with y'all. You see, I think that we can get into a trap of running the rat race so much that we neglect real time with our children by overscheduling our lives and even the lives of our kids. Now, this can also be that we're just simply too busy with everything else. It could be wives cheating your kids for the sake of your home. Because you've got to keep the home in a certain way, you actually neglect time with your kids. It can be husbands or fathers cheating your kids because of hobbies or ball games or TV or newspapers. The old icon is always the father hidden behind the newspaper. It can be grandmoms and granddads neglecting time with their family because they're so busy doing their own thing. And so physically we can neglect time with our children. We'll look to Deuteronomy chapter 6 in a moment, but basically Deuteronomy 6 is emphasizing the same point, is that you've got to spend time with your family. The second way we can neglect them or cheat them physically, and this is a hard one, is not discipline them or training them. In Proverbs chapter 6, let me read you Proverbs 6. For the commandment is a lamp, and the teaching a light, and the reproofs of discipline are the way of life. Proverbs chapter 13, verse 24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son. What strong language. If you refuse to discipline, you hate your son. But he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. Is diligent to discipline him. Brother Keeble, Marshall Keeble, the famous evangelist of years back, used to say that every cow can only go to the edge of the fence. A cow can only go to the edge of the fence. And then Brother Keeble would say, every human being has a fence, the Word of God. And we're only supposed to go to the edge of that. In other words, we're supposed to stay within the boundaries of the Word of God. And when we go outside of the boundaries of the Word of God, when we go outside of God's requirements for us, it causes problems. Well, let me apply that in a family way. We have to set fences for our children. And if we allow them to set their own fences, if we're not there to guide them and to set some fences for them, we are cheating them. And children need and want and must have a measure of discipline and limits, some fences set up for them. And so this can be too much freedom and not enough guidance. Often teenagers are given too much freedom and choice at too early of an age. They may want to make decisions, but they don't need to make their own decisions. I'm reminded once again of an issue that we talked about before. But we need to be so careful, parents, about the dangers of having unfiltered internet access or unfiltered use of their cell phones and other type ways of accessing media, movies and things like that. You need to set some guidelines on those things. You need to be involved. You need to know their Facebook page and to know what they're doing on the websites. You need to know what they're doing on the weekend. You see, we can cheat our kids physically if we allow them to have too much freedom and not enough guidance. And the last one that I want to say regarding physically is that we can cheat our kids by giving them too much or too little responsibility. This is also a tough balance we have to walk, and I certainly haven't figured out the answer yet, but I think it's a healthy tension we need to have in our relationships with our kids. That is, as you're raising kids, we've got to give them freedom so that they can be kids. In other words, we don't want to put all kinds of responsibility on them so that they're doing the job that we need to be doing. If they're the older brother, they don't always need to be taking care of the baby brother. But we also need to give them some chores. We need to teach them the value of that four-letter word, work. We need to teach them the value of a dollar and that there needs to be instilled within them what hard work is and what dollars are and how you attain them and the preciousness of managing those dollars. And so we need to give them responsibility, but we don't need to give them too much so that they can't be a kid. But we also don't need to give them too little so they can't, so that they're basically spoiled. And so physically, those are some good things to think about and consider as you consider how are you cheating your children. I want to tell you a story and then I'm going to move on. I was a vice president of a company. She was an outstanding leader. She was a lady. And she kept trying to quit because she felt like she was cheating her kids and her husband. And she loved her job, but she spent hours and hours at her job. She was, as I said, a heavy leader in this company, vice president, and so it required so much of her. And each time she would go in and she would say, you know what, I've got to cut back. I've got to cut back on my time. I've got to cut back on the responsibilities I have here at work. And they would say, no, we need you too much. You're too good at it. And they would pile on more money. They would pile on more benefits. And each time she would accept and she would say, you know, I'll do that. And it got to the point where she felt like she had to work so much for all that. And ultimately, she came to the decision on her own. She went in one day and she told her boss, the president, she said, I don't care what you offer me. I don't care what benefits you give me. I am quitting. I don't know how I'm going to make it all work financially, but my husband and I, we're going to figure it out. But I am not going to cheat my husband and my kids anymore. Now, that's a powerful story of this lady who said, you know what? I just cannot give the time that I need to give, that I want to give to my kids in this job. And I've got to find something different. I've got to find something that I can live with so that I don't feel like I am cheating my family. She made a courageous decision. Physically, we can cheat our kids. But now let's move to emotionally. Emotionally, I believe we can cheat our kids. We can leave them holding the rock. And once again, these are some tough ones to deal with. We can cheat our kids emotionally by overexposure that takes away their innocence. And this is tough too because we have to expose them to the world. We have to live in the world but not of the world, Jesus says. And Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. But Jesus says in Matthew chapter 18, the passage that we read, is that children are innocent. And he says here that we are not to lead them astray. We are not to confuse them or cause them to sin. Now obviously each child is going to sin and each child is going to become of age and make choices that are poor and become a sinner just like all of us. But I tell you, we as parents have a tough job and one that I think we don't often consider enough. And that is controlling what influences we allow to be in our children's mind. The proverb is still true that garbage in will equal garbage out. So it is, we need to be careful what we expose our children to. You see, how do we do this? Well, too much of the world, basically.
whether it's TV, movies, or internet, too much of our own problems,
if we're sharing all of our heavy adult problems with our child, it's probably not a good thing. If we put
them in the middle of family relationships, hey,
I need you to know the secret, and we're going to do something, but you can't tell Dad. We're going to go out and spend some money shopping, but don't tell Dad. Or, sadly, in divorce situations, many times the children get caught in the middle with the emotional baggage between the two and communicating between the two. You see, we can expose them too much to adult problems and adult issues.
In many ways, we're cheating them of their childhood.
And then a second thing, I think, emotionally, we can damage their self-esteem.
Now, our self-image and self-esteem. Now, let me give another quick disclaimer on this one.
I think our culture and our world and much of the pop books out there go too far on this. And they want to go so far to say we shouldn't discipline our children, we shouldn't correct our children, and we shouldn't focus them in certain directions. Obviously, I disagree with that. I've already spoken against that. But I do think Colossians 3, verse 21, the Bible, in this passage and other passages, says, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. Don't provoke them to wrath. Don't be angry with them, it says.
It says, be careful with them, lest they become discouraged. Lest they become discouraged. Lest they lose their heart.
What Paul is saying in Colossians 3:21 and Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, he's saying, don't be so tough on them. Don't be so harsh on them that they feel like they can never win your approval. It's one thing to push. It's one thing to have high expectations. It's another thing to give them the idea that they are never worthy or good enough for you. That they're always having to win your love. It's amazing. And let me say one thing on this. It's amazing how this one never dies. In other words, it never dies in the heart of a child to always want the approval of the parents. Doesn't matter whether the child's 20, 30, 40. If their parents are still living, and sometimes even when the parents have gone on, they're still trying to win and do things by their performance to get the approval of some mom or dad that never would give them that approval. So we need to be careful about cheating our children.
We need to, rather on the other hand, Ephesians chapter 4 would teach us
that we're supposed to build up our children, edify them. Yeah, we're to correct them, but we're also to build them up. We need to say things like, I love you, so often.
We need to say things like, I'm proud of you, or you did a good job. Those words can speak so much, no matter their age. No matter their age, when you share with them that you're proud of them and that you love them. It's amazing how
kids, they can be in an audience where the whole audience is appreciating them and telling them what a good job they did. And the kid might be 5, kid might be 35, the kid might be 45. The kid is thinking, what does my dad, what does my mom think? Even if a whole room is saying, boy, you did a good job.
So we need to be careful about damaging their self-image. When we make them feel as if they're never good enough,
use words that build up. I got ahead of my PowerPoint.
The next thing I want to say is, and I had to put this one on it.
We don't want to say this because it's such a sensitive subject, but I told you it was a sensitive lesson. We can cheat our kids through divorce. Now, that is one that we all know, and yet we still have divorces.
This is such a sensitive and tender subject, and I understand sometimes divorce is necessary when there cannot be repentance and when one partner is not willing to stay in the marriage because of unfaithfulness or not willing to stay in the marriage, period.
But let me say this. When you choose to have kids, it seems to me that you're making a pledge to raise those kids together. And when you're married and you are choosing to bring kids into this world, it should make you have a more extra effort in raising those kids together.
Now, many kids will spend the rest of their life, even though they know it's not rational, they will spend the rest of their lives in some ways wondering what they did to cause mommy and daddy to get a divorce. What they could have done different, and still dreaming of what they could do to bring them back together. Now this, in a real sense, is very similar to what God says in Malachi chapter 2 when He says in verse 10, I hate divorce. And then verse 14, He says, but you say, why does He not? Talking about this marriage. Because the Lord was witness between you and the wife of your youth to whom you have been faithless. Though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. Did He not make them one with the portion of the Spirit in their union? And what was the one God seeking? God was seeking godly offspring. So guard yourselves. 1 Corinthians 7 speaks to the same thing. He says, I don't want you to divorce because the children in that union are important. And there's a sense where they can, the Christian can sanctify and help lead those children to Christ. And who knows whether you'll win that spouse for Christ. Now let me say this, and I would die over this principle. It is such an important principle. And y'all hear me say it a lot. Once again, I'm not trying to make guilt for the past. Many of us live in a situation where you have a divorce. But let me say this, if you're married and you have children in that union, the very most important gift you can give those children is a happy and secure marriage. The security of those kids in some way very directly comes from the security of your marriage. We may not like that, but you and I know as we've watched kids and teenagers for years, we know that it's true. That the greatest gift you can give your children is a healthy marriage. And that your marriage in some very direct way determines the personal security of your kids and allows them to have healthy relationships with others. I'm not saying if you're a kid here and your parents are divorced that you're not going to be healthy. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying all of us that are parents need to understand the importance our marriage relationship plays in our kids' lives. And that those kids have a tremendous desire for us to be together. And so when we get to thinking about what we want and our desires, and all the problems we've got in this marriage, we need to look into the hearts and into the eyes of those kids. We can cheat our kids emotionally through these three things. The final thing I would say, and maybe the most important thing, is that we can cheat our kids spiritually. Spiritually. Now, one of the things that I think is most important on this, I got to quote Sammy Jones. Y'all remember him? He was here with us back in 2005, I believe. And Sammy said in a lesson he was doing on empowering our children, Sammy said, if I empower my children to be successful in sports, and his son was a great basketball player. He played basketball at Freed Harmon. If I empower my children to be successful in education, and he has a son that now is a principal at a school at somewhere, and he says, if I empower my kids to be successful, and he lists off other things. Yet if I do not empower them to be faithful to God, then he said that I will feel like I failed in the most important area of all. Now, notice, parents, if your children are older, you can still pray. You can still love. You can still do what you can for their faith. But if they're younger, and you're raising those children, let me share a few things. First of all, you can cheat your children spiritually by not living the Christian life. They don't care what you say because what you are screams so loudly they can't hear it. What you are screams so loudly they can't hear it. Kids can spot a hypocrite long before any elder or any preacher ever spots a hypocrite. Kids see it all. They know. They know if you're living the profession you claim to live. And so by not living the Christian life, you can cheat your kids spiritually. by not taking them, key word, taking them to Bible class and worship. Now,
sometimes we emphasize that we shouldn't just take them. We should go involved and be involved with them. Yes, that's true, but let me tell you something. I emphasize taking here because your kids can't get here on their own. Your kids are not going to get here on their own. Most of them can't drive, and even if they can drive, they're not going to have the responsibility many times once they turn 16 and 17 to get up and get to church. And so you have a responsibility of getting them involved in Bible class and in worship. So many times, too, kids want to be involved. Kids love Bible class. Kids love the activities that Ryan plans and the youth devotionals. And many times, parents, I know those are tough. And kids, you need to tell. We don't have many kids here this morning because they're going to EU. But you need to tell your parents you appreciate them driving back at 8 o'clock on Sunday night and picking you up from the youth devotional. But parents, let me tell you something. You are doing the right thing. It's tough on you. It's tough always carrying your kids around to various things and making sure they're there and giving up time. But let me tell you, you are doing the right thing by having them involved. And if you're not having them involved, let me challenge you. Get them involved and encourage them to be involved and require them to be involved. Require them to be involved. Set some fences with Bible class and worship and the activities of the church. And then the final thing I would say on spiritually is not talking to your kids about faith and life. Not talking to them. Don't let your Bible class teachers be the only one that talk to them about the big issues of life. There's some issues that you need to talk to your kids about. And it may be even older kids, but there's some issues you need to be willing to have a listening ear if they're older, and if they're younger, you need to instruct them on. We often think about the issues related to the fleshly sins and sex and all those type of things. Yes, those need to be talked about. But let me tell you, your kids also need to know about what you think about Jesus. What you think about faith and His Word. What you think about all the churches and all the various ways of worship. What you think about suffering and cancer and death. When they're struggling, when something, a tragedy happens, like we had this weekend with an 18-year-old boy getting killed in a car accident, they want to hear what you think about that. They need that guidance because they're not mature enough to handle those big issues of life. And so that's what Deuteronomy says. It says, verse 7, "You shall teach them diligently to your children. You should talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontless between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates." Talk to your kids. Now, how do we quit cheating our kids? I want to give you one thing. The answer's easy. Easy to say, not easy to do. It's about relationship. It's about relationship. We have to build a relationship. Now, that involves all the things that I've said, but with our kids, it involves lots of time, it involves talking, it involves our faith, and it involves our relationship with God. It involves our relationship with God. Let me read a couple things that I think make this point so well. There was a survey done by an adolescent health group, 11,500 teenagers, and factors that are most helpful in preventing harmful behavior, violence, suicide, substance abuse, sexual behavior, teen pregnancy. They surveyed all these teenagers. Here's what they found. The presence of parents is very beneficial at four key times of the day: early morning, after school, dinner time, and bedtime. Did I read Deuteronomy 6, chapter 7 and 9 first? Because that's exactly what Deuteronomy 6, 7 through 9 says. Is that you talk to them in the morning, you spend time with them at lunch or at dinner, and you spend time with them before they go to bed. He goes on to say in another survey, 527 teenagers done by a children's hospital in Cincinnati, they observed that if families eat their meals together five times or more per week, the children are the least likely to be on drugs, to be depressed, or to be in trouble with the law. They were more likely to be doing well in school and surrounded by a supportive circle of friends. All this stuff, a Harvard study of 65 families over an 8-year period said that eating together or spending time together was more important than anything else in terms of training and children being well adjusted. Here's what the conclusion of this scientific stuff was. Parental involvement is the key to getting kids through the storms of adolescence. Family relationships are what matter. Family relationships are what matter.
None of us are going to be perfect parents. I certainly don't want to give the impression that I'm a perfect parent.
But I do want to emphasize 1 Peter 4:8. Love covers a multitude of sins. Priority covers a multitude of sins. When you prioritize your children, and they know whether they're prioritized or not, over other things, it means that you love them. And then with God,
what is your relationship like with God? What changes are you going to make?
I hope that this lesson has been challenging to you as well as myself, because I hope that it leaves you wanting to live a different life. And if you have young children at home, I hope that you'll really think about life. If you have teenagers, I hope you really think about how you're raising them. And if you have older kids, I hope that you'll reinvest in your relationship with your kids and with your grandkids, and reinvest on putting them as a priority and not leaving them holding the rock. If you're here this morning and you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, if you want to put Christ on in baptism, if you want to say, I want to live that example, I really want to live it. If you want to put Christ on in baptism, for you want to be rededicated and restored, if we can help you in any way, come as together we stand and sing.
Bring Christ your broken life, so marked by sin.